Recorded live in Petone, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and all of the other episodes of the show at cinematica.co.nz. Welcome everybody to Season 4, Episode 9 of Cinematica. Back in the studio, I'm Dan Slevin, and with me here at Cinematica Towers are Simon Wherry.
Hello.
And Kaylee Carruthers, g'day.
Hello.
Lovely to see your happy smiling faces as opposed to
being...
Nice
to have you back, Dan.
Yeah, you Jeffer.
I know. I have to say that Auckland, I've been to Auckland twice in the last 7 days, and it's been absolutely beautiful both times. And I'm kind of, I'm not saying my head is being turned necessarily, but they do some pretty flash sunsets in Auckland because they've just got this big sky, you know. It's just there's something about that landscape. Well, you know, Wellington's closed in. I was talking to somebody about this, you know, that it's lovely. It's really great. And
but it looks like you can almost, some days, you know, you can just touch the moon because it's right there on the hill.
Yeah.
Whereas in Auckland, you don't get that.
That's right.
We're all about intimacy here.
You take your choices. Exactly. But there is something about those big Auckland skies, and when the sun sets on a clear evening, it really is nice. So good on you, Auckland.
Yeah. And way to go on all those frozen yogurt venues you have now. Love it.
That's their claim to fame, isn't it? The frozen yogurt capital of the world.
Just need to find a place where you can get a good coffee in that city. Just saying.
Easy.
Just saying.
Yeah, there's a few there. I've found them.
All right, in today's episode of the show, Mads Mikkelsen plays an ordinary bloke under extraordinary pressure in The Hunt. Jesper Christensen, a name to conjure with, is an extraordinary bloke trying to change the course of history in The Last Sentence. And in The Other Son, two teenage blokes on either side of the Palestinian divide are not the people that they thought they were. But first, it's time to have a look at what's in the mailbag, Kaylee.
Yes, so from the Mirka, we got this tweet today. Going with David Lynch's Eraserhead, which screened at the Wellington Film Society on Monday. Two-word review, Chaplin-esque nightmare.
Yeah, I was on a plane, and I was kind of glad actually that I wasn't able to watch that one. You know, I had a legitimate excuse for not being forced into Lynch's nightmare world. I watched that when I was a high school kid, and I was never quite the same again. Eraserhead.
I still have yet to see the whole thing.
Dun dun dun! Oh boy.
Reese Pye says, Behind the Candelabra, two-word review, blingingly touching. Douglas steals the show, but Damon plays difficult role to perfection. And a follow-up tweet, I may have just made up blingingly, but that's fine.
No, good. We make up words all the time here, so that's completely fine.
Yes. And we did have, gonna do a little pitch of 48 Hours, because it was the Wellington City finale last night, which I was at and Dan was hosting. And if you missed it, you missed a Dan spectacular. It was quite lovely. You got a standing ovation for giving yourself an award.
I have to say that.
You gave yourself an award.
Well, I wasn't.
It was well-deserved.
I wasn't sure
that. No, but that's a bit naughty. I mean, somebody else should have given it to you, not you.
Well, I wasn't sure that anybody else was going to. So, it's like, if you want a job done, you've got to do it yourself.
But they did make a brilliant video montage for you.
Did they have any other people competing?
In my category of meanness.
And the winner is?
Well, this is the thing, listeners, that it's 10 years since I started running 48 Hours in Wellington, and this is my final year. Sort of wrapping it up.
Yeah,
and
running, yeah.
What?
No, I'm just, I can't imagine you running physically, but running it, yes.
Hey. All right, managing, if you like. Anyway, so 10 years is enough. I thought it's time to hand over to somebody else, and it was a little bit emotional last night. And I don't know what happens when you guys listening leave your jobs, but if you leave a job and you get 750 people giving you a standing ovation and making you a video with featuring like a cast of thousands, basically, that's kind of a nice way to go out.
It's a very nice way to go out, isn't it?
So thanks to everybody, and a good night was had by all, and a worthy winner, Traces of Nut, who made How to Meet Girls from a Distance last year, they won the Make My Movie competition. They won the Wellington 48-hour competition for the first time after 9 attempts at entering. They've been finalists a lot, and it couldn't have been a better team from my personal point of view to win the competition. It was just the most appropriate answer. So Dean Hewison and his team, Traces of Nut. Yeah, did fantastic. You can tell I'm a little bit hoarse after last night's exertions. Yeah.
And also, big ups to the I want to say teen girl squad, which they were, of Oriental, for picking up a number of awards for Immature.
Yeah.
So way to go, young ladies.
Six formers from Wellington East Girls College, and the first time a school team has broken into the top three in the city. First time entry, and just a team with just three girls in it, and they all wrote and directed the piece. We were just really taken with it. It was an utterly charming piece of work, and they're going places, those girls.
So how can you see these things now, Dan, once the show's
well,
over?
Well, this is they're not actually available to watch until after the national finals. So once a film gets eliminated from the competition, it's allowed to go up online. So there's lots of films that enter the competition that are online at the 48-hour website in the screening room. But anything that's still entitled to go for the national prizes, then they're under strict orders not to put them online because we want people to go to the Civic to watch them on the big screen. So it'll be a month or so before those are available online. But Auckland audiences should check out the national final, which is in July 17th, something around that date. And it'll be at the Civic. Be a fantastic night, and the best from all over the country will screen.
Fantastic.
Mm. And so, speaking of winners, Uther Dean, who won the best script for their...
For the film, I can't remember the name of the film, but the team's called Paul Is Dead to Me.
Yeah, it's maybe the last
Time. The last time. Well done, you. I've only seen the film 4 times, and I can't remember what it's called.
It was a lovely little
piece. It was a great film. And
I'm always impressed by ones that are filmed in vehicles.
Yeah, and a worthy winner of the best script. It was a very, very well-written piece.
Well,
yeah.
I'm still trying to get my GoPro back from Blair, which was strapped to the bonnet of a car, apparently. So
he's
gone very quiet on it.
Oh, really? Do you think it's actually still driving around somewhere?
Probably. So Uther Dean, who is a writer, has offered us a few tickets to a play about space, which will be showing at BATS in, I believe, July. Mm. Haven't heard back from him yet, so we are going to give those away next week on the show.
But make sure you listen. And actually, a play about space first appeared at BATS in The Fringe this year and was extremely well reviewed. So it's returning to that theatre, and I'm going to get a chance to see it, which I'm looking forward to.
You know what, also, are you hoarse because you sat up and watched the cricket last night? I'm a bit yawny.
No, I didn't know about the cricket until after it had already been rained out, unfortunately. So this is I'm a little bit disappointed. I've been so busy recently.
So much on that you didn't even remember the cricket.
No, exactly. And I'm paying through the nose for the Sky subscription for that very reason. You know, when there's no football, it's only a New Zealand cricket tour is the reason why I keep Sky on. And of course, I'm too tired to watch it.
Condolences to any Australian listeners out there, but we would have had it won even without the rain. So you can just take that on the chin.
I think everybody knows that. Mm. Well, talking of taking it on the chin, isn't it the Australian cricketers dishing it out to the chins at the
moment?
That's
right.
They're being sent home.
Feisty. Feisty young chaps.
Getting into trouble at 2 a.m. in bars. I mean, well, they're professional sports people. They should know better.
It's because they are professional sports people that they get into trouble because they've got so much cash. I mean, back in my day, I can only afford like maybe 1 pint of beer, whereas, you know, they can get cocktails and they can just go bananas.
When I was a student, I could go into the Clarendon Tavern in Wellington with maybe a couple of bucks in loose change, and they had a quiz machine.
Like
one of those trivia quiz machines that gave out prizes, and I could actually sustain a night's drinking based on winning prizes off that quiz machine from my $2 stake. The questions were so easy.
I've never seen a quiz machine, but I feel like I could have like a serious career in winning money from quiz machines.
Yeah, and it was great. I just turned up on a Friday with a couple of bucks, and that was my night.
Do you remember the one where the fish and chip shops where you flung the silver ball around and it had a lady with a, and then she'd tell you what your future was.
What did she tell you your future was?
I can't remember.
We had the ones where you had to put, like, your... It was based on your pulse, and you, like, put your hand on the magic ball, and it was, like, take your pulse and gave you some stupid
thing. How sweaty your palm was. anyway, we should go back to the movies.
Speaking of should have known better and ways to spend your money out on the town.
Yeah.
Top five for the week.
Yes, please.
So, coming in again in the top five this week, we have a Bollywood, I'm assuming it's a Bollywood film, Yamla Pagla Diwana 2, so a sequel, nonetheless, at number 5, opening at number 5, in 4, down from 3, Star Trek Into Darkness.
Just people still going, good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Down to 3 from 2, Hangover Part 3.
Ugh.
Down to 2 from 1, Fast and Furious 6, and opening in the number 1 position, are we surprised? It is The Great Gatsby.
I am surprised, actually. I'm not surprised that it was number 1, but I'm surprised at the numbers, because this is a film that, for at least a year, it's had a bit of a shadow looming over it. You know, I talked to somebody just the other day, and the only thing they knew about the film, really, was, oh, he had to recut it, didn't he? You know, like, oh, he's been having problems. So it's like, it's got a reputation as this troubled film. I think most people who are going are expecting to either not like it or not love it. You know, like, people who love the book are wanting to engage in some kind of argument with people afterwards because it's because of the way it diverges. And yet people are going anyway. I think that's a sign of something that, you know, like, people want to partake in the discussion. They want to see what he's done with it. They're curious. Mm. A lot of people are going just because they're curious, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right. There's a lot of curiosity about it.
And that's a really good thing.
It is a good thing.
You know, it takes a lot to get people to put their hands in their pockets for a 3D movie these days, you know. And particularly, you know, we like to think that most people would go to the movies once a week, but we know that's not actually true, you know. So it is quite a big, you know, choice for people. Mm-hmm. But the other thing about it, I suppose, is that with all of
But also, like, at the moment, what is there for the adults?
I was just about to say that, exactly. Yeah. All the really big blockbusters, the big publicity movies have been for kids and comic book aficionados.
They certainly overlap. Things like Star Trek is for adults too, but not in that broad sort of scale, which, you know, Gatsby does.
Yeah, so it probably is the first grown-up movie of the grown-up blockbuster of the year.
They've been waiting, you know, yeah. they don't get enough.
Well, let's make some more. That's make right. some more than Hollywood.
Gatsby 2.
The return. The return of Gatsby.
It'll be interesting.
I was just a nick. I was fine, actually.
It'll be interesting to see how long it sits in number one. So we'll have to see what next week looks like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't remember what it's got opening against it. Nothing really, I don't think, from memory.
Well, just having a look at the US box office, the fascinating... number one in America this weekend is a movie called The Purge. Has anybody heard anything about this one?
I've had that happen.
The Purge. Yeah, more information than perhaps I was asking for. But this is a horror movie starring Ethan Hawke and Ethan Hawke. And apparently it's produced by the same guys who made the first Paranormal Activities, and it's done on a very similar sort of very low budget. It's made $34 million in its opening weekend across America on, you know, virtually no publicity. It's just stonking the opposition. And
What's it about?
Well, look, I'm just going to tell you here. It says a family is held hostage for harboring the target of a murderous syndicate during the purge, a
12-hour
period in which any and all crime is legalized. So it's kind of horror science fiction.
It's science fiction, though, where there's no crime except for one day of the year when everyone goes bonkers, and so they all lock themselves in. I know. It's kind of like so there's no crime at all year round, and then they lock up your house and everything. And these people are wealthy. They've got these sort of big, you know, security systems.
Right.
But somebody is being chased and bangs on their door, and the daughter lets them in. And it goes from there.
Well, scary. I think...
Is it like Panic Room?
I wouldn't say. I don't know.
Well, it's an interesting idea. It's an interesting premise, and it taps into, yet again, it taps into that sort of modern zeitgeist fear that we have about crime and about underclass.
As the gaps get bigger.
I'm confused. Okay, is it like there's no crime, and then one day out of the year you're allowed to commit a crime?
You're basically, you can cut loose for, you know, there's no crime.
It's like Mardi Gras.
There's no violence. And then basically for one day of the year you can go out there and kill people. You can do whatever you like.
So
what?
I don't know. It's kind of like, and I'm not sure why you do that though. Is it to keep the population down or what? I don't know. But you know, I'm sure there'll be an explanation.
This sounds as bizarre as the premise for the internship. This just seems a bit ridiculous.
Anyway, does it have a date, a release date in New Zealand? I imagine they'll be rushing it into theatres.
It hasn't appeared on my radar. Right.
Well, I'll tell you what, that kind of money does not get ignored for very long, I would say, and particularly as those Paranormal Activity movies are continuing to make serious coin here, I would imagine it's not.
Because they rushed Evil Dead in, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
That kind of didn't really...
And yet, the Evil Dead remake made $90 million internationally on a $16 million budget. So they're everybody involved in that is super happy. I have to say,
Because they got paid.
Yeah, but it didn't do fantastic business here in New Zealand, but enough internationally in a short period of time to for people to trust that they can go back to the well, do another one.
Well, they're the perfect distribution film too, aren't they? Because it's just monster money in that first week.
Yep.
And then bam, it's gone within 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah,
it's
and then you've made your reputation, so you can continue to sort of milk it through home video for later
you
on.
Get the DVD out quick.
And you're rebuilding a franchise, which means that the second one's even easier to sell. So yeah, it does make a lot of sense. And I hope they come back to New Zealand and keep making them here, because the Auckland production economy really does need a lot more of those sorts of things. Mm. Time to look at this week's new releases. So shall we get underway?
Mm.
Hvad er det, der er sket?
Ja, det kan jeg ikke sige. Måske det bedste, at du tager fri et par dage, ikke? Så kan vi få det her på plads sådan stille og roligt. Hvad har hun nu fundet på, den lille bandit? Vi har desværre anledning til at tro, at der er sket grænseoverskridende adfærd imod.
Du skal ikke høre på, hvad de siger nu.
I should point out that all of the films that we're going to be talking about today are in a foreign language.
Or multiple
foreign languages. So you can feel free to drift off during the audio inserts, because it's unlikely you'll find much English in them. The first film that we're going to talk about today is The Hunt, which is the new film starring Mads Mikkelsen. This is a film that actually played here at the International Film Festival last year, then went around the world to Telluride in Toronto, and it's doing this sort of classic art house release where it's having 6 or 9 months of festivals and then going into cinemas, and so it's releasing here now next month in the US, and it's a big heavyweight drama about a school teacher, a kindergarten teacher.
Recently divorced, isn't he?
Yeah, recently divorced. Yeah. In a small town in Denmark.
Not a pleasant divorce either.
No, I guess there's some scars there. Yeah. But he is just a genuinely nice guy. And he's teaching at kindergarten, and the kids obviously love him, and the kids of his friends obviously love him. And he's a sensitive, warm-hearted, sort of decent bloke. Due to a misunderstanding in another family, a young child, a young little girl, finds herself under some pressure from another teacher, the head of the kindergarten, and makes a rash, inaccurate allegation of bad behavior on the part of Mr. Mikkelsen, and all hell breaks loose basically on his life, because it's a small town and nobody seems to know how to deal with it. So all the choices that they make escalate a situation rather than defuse a situation. And so basically the entire town turns against this poor guy, and he's ostracized from the community. He's beaten up in the supermarkets. He tries to defend himself, but even he doesn't really know how to defend himself. And it's a really bad scene all around. It's a dark drama about the underside of human suspicion and human guilt as well. I had real problems with this film when I watched it, and I appreciate that I'm kind of out on a limb a wee bit, because I felt like nobody that I was watching in the film behaved the way like a normal, sensible human being would, and I couldn't believe that the contents of an entire village would all do things that were so against their own interests in order to build drama. That's what I felt like. It was like that every choice that was being made, from the principal of the kindergarten to Mads Mikkelsen's character himself to his best mate, who's the father of the child who makes the allegations, they all choose to do something that goes against common sense, and it has the effect of building the drama, which meant that I never really believed in the drama, if you know what I mean. Now, I
but when it comes to small children, people, I mean, you know, in these sort of circumstances, there, I mean, there is a level of, you know, people get upset pretty quickly and aren't rational necessarily.
That's true, but professionals like like a principal of a kindergarten and a professional teacher should, I guess, if they'd set it 20 years ago, and this is in the New Zealand context, we know about the Christchurch crash. Peter Ellis case, and how there was a certain amount of naivety around the whole issue 20 odd years ago, and as a result he was able to go through the courts and be pilloried on the basis of hearsay and what could have been planted memories on the basis of these children, and he's never really been able to satisfactorily clear his name around that. And I can understand that if you'd set it 20 years ago, there was a certain amount of naivety and you could maybe believe it. But setting it in the present day, I can't imagine that there would be anybody who, any man who teaches female children wouldn't be aware of the risks to himself and what he needed to do to protect himself. And, you know, there's a moment where the first allegation is made to him by the kindergarten principal, and instead of doing what a normal person should do, which is to stand up and go, actually, I'm going to leave now and I'm going to come back with my lawyer and we can have this conversation with witnesses and I'm going to get some advice about how I should deal with this because I'm completely innocent. He doesn't do that, and he doesn't do the most basic self-protection. And I know we're supposed to believe that he's just a decent guy and he really believes that that people can be persuaded and all he has to do is say, I didn't do it, and he'll be trusted. But it still just seems to me naive, and naive beyond the level that I could believe in. Now, that's not to say that Mads Mikkelsen isn't a fantastic actor and doesn't do an amazing job. And it's so nice to see him. I mean, he's a bit like Christopher Walken, isn't he? You know, that he often plays wild, violent, wild-eyed, hard case. You know, he's playing Hannibal Lecter on television at the moment, and it's really nice to see somebody like that play a normal, decent guy, and, you know, getting to see his face. You know, still, you know, he's a really sort of good-looking guy, but in most movies we see him, you know, like the Casino Royale, he had that wonky eye with the tear that wouldn't stop, and all, you know, he was just kind of always nuts.
But he does seem to have a very interesting lineup that he does. I mean, you think of A Royal Affair, and then you think of this. You know, he does sort of mix it up, I think, quite nicely.
He was one of the special guests at Telluride. Did I say I was at Telluride last year? By the way,
don't think you did.
He was one of the special guests at Telluride, and he was a fantastic interview, actually. I would love to talk to him, because he is, in real life, he's a genuinely down-to-earth, decent guy who loves sports, and he started out as a gymnast at high school. He was a gymnast and then went to play sport and then turned into a dancer and went to dance school. And out of dancing became an actor, and he's a working class guy with genuine sort of roots, and he's just a really easy guy to get to know, but he plays these incredible wild extreme characters, and this is an interesting diversion, because he's in this film he's the guy who's having the extremes sort of done to him, so he's the real reason for going to see this film, I think. I don't believe that I'm that my response to it is necessarily the definitive one. You know, like, I know lots of people who have been really quite moved by the story and really swept along by it. But I find that when you watch a film, if you don't buy the premise, if you don't buy the initial setup, it's really hard to get back into it. And that was what I found with this one. So I know that you two guys haven't
knocked it off.
Haven't got to see this one. Only opens today. Around the country, so there is still plenty of time to catch up with it, and I'm looking forward to you guys seeing it and maybe coming back with a couple more words than just two as a response to me to see whether you feel the same way. And certainly listeners at home, feel free to engage with me on this one, because I know that how I've reacted to it is not how everybody else is reacting to it. You're going to want two words now, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I would say beat up. Yeah, I'm afraid. So that is The Hunt, and it's Simon. You can tell us where it's playing. Is it all over the joint?
No, it's in sort of select cinemas. Just select. Yeah, okay. You know, two or three locations each main centre.
Right,
is where it's playing.
So I thought it would go a little bit wider than that, but
you know, it's already played in the festival, and like you say, it sounds like it's a fairly
bit of a hard sell.
It's a bit of a specialised film, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's about right.
Okay, we're going to stay in Scandinavia now, and but we're going to go back about 70 years.
Han har en moralisk syn på omoralen. Men han säger att du är sjuk.
Ja, jag är sjuk.
Vad fattas dig?
Det är min man som fattas mig.
Du är förblindad av ditt hat mot tyskarna.
Jag hatar inte tyskarna, jag hatar nazisterna.
Uff. Very exciting final gunshot. The last sentence, and Kaylee, I'm going to toss this one over to you to give us a bit of a history lesson.
Okay. so yes, the last sentence is set in right before the Second World War, based in Norway.
Sweden.
Sorry. I just watched it today. I'm so. And it is about based on the true story of a gentleman who works for a newspaper who is writing pieces against the regime of Adolf Hitler, who has just come into power in Germany, and stirs up quite a bit of trouble. But that is second to the trouble he's stirring up at home with his affairs, with his boss's wife or head of the company. Really, it's like an episode of Mad Men that's set in 1938. It's very dramatic.
It is. And this is something that took me completely by surprise with this film, because the trailer, if you watch the trailer, you would get the impression that it is essentially like a Scandinavian World War II, what would you call it?
He's fighting for the rights of
the politics, yeah. But the politics and the freedom fightingness of it all would be the main sort of. But it's just one thread, and it's not even it's a thread that disappears for long periods of the film while he's navigating his kind of tortured and tortuous home life. Jesper Christensen plays the guy, the journalist, and you may know him best as the boss of the Quantum organization in Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace. And it still bugs me, quite frankly, that he is still at large, as far as I can work out. And we had
he's
a whole
traveled backwards through time.
Not so much.
He has another character in this film. He hasn't been sent back by Bond.
No, this is a side issue. But it perturbs me because we've had an entire new Bond film where he's.
How can you go from this to that?
Well, just because it's interesting.
You're a wild man.
I am.
We're just doing a short segue.
It's a segue. It's a digression. Anyway, that's him, right? So he's got this amazing face, right? He's got
great hair too.
Fantastic hair, grey hair, cheekbones. He's just this film is shot in luminous black and white, and so everything glows in just a really fantastic way, and it just reminds you how gorgeous black and white photography can be. Something else about this film which I thought was really fascinating, and that is the way that it deals really honestly with the love lives of older people. You know, there's nobody in this film that's under 50. I can think maybe his daughter, who turns up for a couple of scenes, but everybody else in this film, they're mature. You know, they've been around for a long time, but that doesn't mean that they're not still falling in love with each other. That doesn't mean that they're not still passionate about each other, or disposing of relationships that are no longer meaningful to them. It's just they're like teenagers in some ways, and I quite like the fact that it just totally respects the fact that all those feelings are still very much alive in people at an older age. You know, I think that it's something we just don't see, and it doesn't even get remarked on in the film. You just sort of have to notice it as it goes by. Any other observations there?
I really enjoyed it because the black and white, really, really beautiful. I found that after watching the trailer, I wasn't really interested in watching the film. The trailer made it seem a little bit campy to me, but the film is far and above what they show you in that 2 minutes or 1 minute trailer, and I definitely recommend it because it's beautiful. The costumes are beautiful. You're not distracted by the color, so you just get to see the black and white. You get to see the cut. You get to see the fabric. Fantastic. Absolutely beautiful film.
How did you find the pace of it? Because I've had a few customers who've kind of commented that it
does feel a bit time. Long, but there is, because there are so many threads of the story going on, that it does go back and forth.
I don't think from a narrative point of view, it's not the most dynamic thing in the world. And the fact that on a fairly fundamental level, he's a difficult character to feel much sympathy for, even though he feels all the right things about Hitler and anti-Nazism and what have you. He's such a dick in his personal life that it's kind of hard to feel much sympathy for him. And also because, and I actually reviewed this in print on the web, the opposite of print, the other day, and then had a conversation with a friend of mine who saw it on the weekend, and she basically completely changed my mind about this film. So she pointed out to me aspects of it that were much more interesting than perhaps I'd given it credit for. I had been sort of annoyed by the pace,
right,
and by the fact that there's not a really strong story sort of arc to it, but the subtext she pointed out to me were much more interesting. And one of those is that, and this is something that I hadn't really paid much attention to, is that Sweden was, of course, neutral in World War II. And I had sort of imagined that that was a kind of noble rise above the fray where we're pacifists or something right. like that. There was some kind of genuine philosophical reason for it, and the film makes absolutely clear that it was pure self-interest. It was that, you know, this guy has been saying that Hitler needs to be stood up to, Finland next door is being invaded, the Norwegians are being invaded, we have to stand up for our fellow Scandinavians, for our fellow Europeans, and for the Jews who are being sort of badly treated. And, you know, he's sort of demanding that Sweden defend its neighbours and enter the war. And the Swedish Prime Minister and the Swedish King are basically going, well, the moment we do that, we're annihilated. Basically, we're tiny and they're huge. And if we do this, you know, we'll be standing up for the right thing, but at what cost? And it's easy for you to say, you know, but we have to send these young men into battle. And so that tension between doing the right thing and knowing intensely what the moral core of a particular question should be, and then having to choose to do something about it or not, I think is really actually much more interesting than I gave it credit for when I first sort of started thinking about the film. So you've got sort of three at least layers there. You've got his personal stuff. He's a former theologian as well who's lost his faith in God, and so there's that strand going on. There's basically the all the rooting, and then there's the and then there's the politics as well. So it's actually there's a lot more to it than I perhaps gave it credit for first time I watched it. So and I'm going to give this one a sort of on second thoughts a bit of a recommend, actually.
Very good.
Bearing in mind that it does take a while to get to where it's going. So Kaylee, do you have two words while I think of mine?
Yes, in an homage to the story and design and a line you hear a lot in the film, my two-word review for the last sentence is perfect marriage.
Okay, that's good. And I'm struggling to think of two here, but I'm just going to can I use black and white as one word?
Yeah.
Okay, black and white, grey. How's that? That's actually useless, isn't it? That's completely useless. Let's pretend that never happened.
Okay.
Anyway.
Can you hear that woodpecker?
Yes.
Is that? Oh, right. There's somebody. You've got somebody working on your roof, have you?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, they're installing artwork.
Look, it's all very. It's nonstop excitement around here, isn't it? Really,
it's always something on the go.
Exactly. Well, there we go. That is the last sentence. I'm holding my script upside down. That would help if I was able to actually read it. The last sentence, and that one's not getting the kind of release that The Hunt is even getting, is it? It's slightly smaller, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just a couple of locations in each city.
Right, so definitely one to seek out if that's the kind of
it's an
area that interests you.
Yeah, it's a film that'll just bubble away. It won't, you know, it's a good film to have in the mix, and it should be released, and it'll just sit there and bubble away.
Yeah, and I'm actually really pleased that the number of people that I've talked to this week who have already seen it just based on flyers in cinemas, which that's think is really good. Yeah. So time for some news.
The New Zealand International Film Festival continues to dominate the local film media agenda with their cleverly scheduled program updates. This morning they are
killing it, aren't they? They're killing it.
You remember when you had to wait?
I know.
You had to wait to hear these things.
But isn't that kind of, in some ways, you know, you get this big blast and then you go through it all and decide as opposed to you get a bit now and a bit. It's like it's almost more to keep track of. You go, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, there's two completely sort of different ways of approaching this. The way it used to be was that we would go to the program launch and Bill would come down from the mountain with the tablets.
That's right.
And he would stand
like the god of wine come down from the mountain.
And he would hand these out and he would tell us what we will be watching for the next 12 months. And we would say, oh, Bill, thank you. Thank you for telling us what we should be watching. And now it's much more democratic, I think, because we get to actually make some suggestions. They've embraced social media really well, I think, because they listen to suggestions and they are communicating back and forth with fans. And I think for film fans in New Zealand, I think it's a much, much more attractive proposition because you feel much more a part of the festival now rather than someone who's simply absorbing it, you know, or, you know, just responding to it.
So, this morning, they announced the first wave of international guests to the event, including the director of the New Zealand-Danish co-production The Weight of Elephants, Daniel Joseph Borgman, Sean Baker from the USA, director of Starlet. There's a Gosling coming for the festival. Unfortunately, not Ryan.
Gotcha going there.
Yeah. Maureen Gosling, co-director of This Ain't No Mouse Music! Will also be in Auckland and Wellington to talk about her music doco, and Aussie filmmakers Kim Mordaunt and Sylvia Wozniski.
I'm not helping.
Will be in both main centers with their award-winning film, The Rocket, and I apologize, and if I meet you during the film festival, I'll shake your hand and say sorry.
Well... Yeah, we are working together with the film festival organisation to do quite a few special events for Cinematica around the festival this year. So I would imagine that yes, yeah, paths will cross.
Hi, yeah. It's Sylvia, right? And 6 months since the world premiere of The Hobbit, A Never-Ending Journey, or whatever it was called, and 6 months before the premiere of Part 2, we have a teaser trailer for The Desolation of Smaug. If you haven't seen it, where have you been? It is the most important thing ever.
It's stop the world.
But no premiere.
No world premiere here. But that means they're just saving it for the last one. We'll still get one. We'll get the third, I'm sure. What did you think? Have you seen the trailer for it? Or the teaser? It's not even a trailer.
I'm one of those people that has been under a rock, clearly.
Boy, oh boy. Well, it's got plenty of Orlando Bloom in it. I tell you what, it actually feels a lot more Lord of the Rings-like than the previous film, which was a lot lighter. This has got a lot more big, grand battle scenes, battle sequences.
A lot of hobbits and barrels going down the river.
So they do the river. So
I
wonder where it's going to finish. Like, I wonder, because, you know, you get to the point where they're stuck in the cave near the end, and I wonder if that's where it'll finish. I
wonder whether they actually get to meet the dragon this time.
Yes, the dragon's in the trailer.
Yeah, that's true.
And they should do. I want some Benedict this time.
Well,
come on.
Isn't that his voice? Isn't that Benedict?
Yeah.
Benedict Thingy Bob. I presume that he turns up even in voice only, maybe.
Yeah, but the dragon is featured at the end of the trailer. Right. Big ol' eye.
We've got another 6 months of this to go, everybody. More bits and pieces leaked out. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Wellington is full of hobbits once again. You can't move for tripping over hobbits and wizards, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it's all on for young and old. A very good friend of mine actually not a very good friend of mine, but a good friend of mine, is...
Hasn't made the cut.
No, no, his day job is Martin Freeman's stand-in.
Yes.
Yeah.
For the film. And so he's back on early starts and long days.
Yes, I spoke with him last night after 48 hours. Yeah. And not only is he a body double for Martin Freeman, he's also driving actors around. So he starts his day at 3 a.m. Mm.
Good
what
work.
What a trooper.
Isn't he good?
Yeah, exactly. So, it's
charming young fella.
I imagine he signed some kind of, all sorts of non-disclosure agreements, but I would love to get him on the show at some point and see if we can get what it's like to be working on.
Is it like to be on the inside?
Yeah, and to get a job purely because you are the right height. What is he? I mean, he's talented.
He's got a great face. Come on.
I know. But when you're a stand-in, basically
and
you're
body
there.
Shape.
And body shape. You're there because you cast the right length of shadow. That's really your job, isn't it? But it would be fascinating. Fascinating all the same. Anyway, you can tell we struggled to get some news out of this week. it's time to go to our last art house release of a very art house week.
As the director of this establishment, falls to me to confirm the serious error. You gave birth at the same time as Mrs. Albezaz in two neighboring rooms. We therefore arrived to the conclusion that when they were evacuated together, the two children were switched by mistake.
Je comprends pas. Tu veux dire que je suis l'autre? Que l'autre c'est moi?
I found some English in that clip just to help ease things a little bit. So, Kaylee, this is another one you've seen, The Other Son.
Yes. So this is set against the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and it follows, as said in the trailer, follows two young men who are on either side of the war, and it turns out were swapped at birth. The parents find out when one of them goes to join the military and has a different blood type. And this all sort of unravels, and you get to see the parent side of it, but also these young men, they're both 19 years old. The one who was raised on the other side of the border has been living in Paris. He's training to become a doctor, and the other one is an artist.
Yeah, there's a very interesting sort of thing there where the Palestinian family, the father is a musician, and yet the son that's been brought up in that family is much more sort of analytical and scientific and education based, whereas the son that was brought up in the Israeli family wants to be a pop star basically and write songs. And so you think, oh, okay, so he got that musical talent from. So you're sort of asked to believe that there's a whole lot of nature versus nurture stuff going on, as well as the Israeli-Palestinian, the political conflict about, which, if you had a choice, which side would you live on? If you had the opportunity to go and live on the safe, wealthy, secure side rather than the sort of burdened side, where would you go? Mm. So, yeah, there's a lot of that going on. But it's awfully contrived, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it felt a bit...
I mean, how often does this really happen, this whole swapped at birth thing? It's like a fairy tale. It's like Grimm's fairy tale.
Mm.
And does it happen a lot?
I don't know.
I was expecting you to do some research.
I don't know if it happens a lot. I have watched documentaries about children that were raised as the opposite gender.
What about Prince Harry? I mean, he looks a bit different.
Yeah, that's true. But I think we all know that's not much of a mystery, is it?
All right, enough of that.
Yeah, I don't know. I felt
there goes
it was
your knighthood.
I felt it was a bit soft, considering the... its background. It did come off as a bit soft and a bit fluffy, and the relationship between the mother, that the wealthy mother, and the son who was off to become a doctor, when they met together, it was a little bit too weird. Like, it was a little bit too sexually charged at times, and it kind of creeped me out a bit. I'm hoping they were obviously going for it's like you're my blood, but it was just a bit weird.
Yeah, well, this is it's interesting, isn't it, that we've got at least a couple of films in today's show where the question is, like, do you buy the premise? Do you believe what you're being shown? Are you going to go on the journey with the characters and with the writer and the directors, and are you prepared to go where they're wanting to take you? And And I felt like this is an example of something where the filmmakers wanted to make a particular point about something and then had to create something, a plot, to make that happen. And it didn't feel all that organic and it didn't feel all that natural.
Yeah, for me, it reminded me of Beckus, which we reviewed last week, where it isn't quite an adult film. It's more like a young adult foreign film because it is a bit soft. There isn't a lot of... There's no sex and no real violence and nothing really aggressive or abrasive going on. I mean, I was interested. It's beautifully shot. You get to see, you know, I got to see parts of places I've never been before, which is exciting. But it was a bit soft.
But it also does quite a good job, I think, of reminding you that normal life, real life, goes on in these places, and you know, the kind of places that we only hear about when bad things happen on the news, or you know, whether it's rockets or bombs or suicide bombers or what have you. You know, you're reminded that actually people still go shopping, they go to the beach, they eat ice cream, and that there's a certain normality of life that goes on around that. That's kind of nice to be reminded of. But it's not enough. I just don't think it was enough to really to make that film a sort of wholehearted recommendation.
But, you know, maybe something good for foreign film education in schools and high schools or something. Yeah. Just because it is sort of accessible.
Yeah, and it is a bit sort of teachy, isn't it,
yeah,
as well?
Yeah. So, yeah, so it's like young adult.
Okay. The Other Son, and so in a week that where there are no blockbusters to speak of, or there's Gatsby's opening week, we just did it last week, so we were ahead of the game.
And what, we got another Earth opening today, isn't it? It's opening today.
Yeah.
After Earth, sorry.
Is that opening today? I thought that was next week.
Yeah, no, it's today. There's even some previews of World War Me this week.
World War Me.
Yes, at the embassy in Wellington.
So just a quirk of fate that we've fallen between our blockbusters on the show this week. So it's all out house all the time, and I think that's a little bit of a pleasant respite before we go back to explosions and planets and
yes, and we will be back at our regular Wednesday time next week.
We will. Yes this delay has been entirely down to my schedule, so I just want to thank
this delay has been sponsored by Rialto Channel's 48 Hours Film Festival
and On Film Magazine. So before we move on to close up the show though, do we have two words for The Other Son?
Yes, my two words for The Other Son are soft politic.
Okay, my two words for Another Son are another pastime. Go and do something else.
Oh.
Yeah. Sorry, I really need to prepare these better, don't I?
It's not, okay. You haven't slept, Dan. You had a big night presenting awards to yourself.
I want to see this video, this homage.
It's apparently it's going to be. It was going to be posted at some point today, and believe you me, it will be everywhere once it gets posted.
Slightly not suitable for work. Just going to put that out there. There's a short animated sequence.
Oh, yeah. There's a short animated sequence which you wouldn't want to be showing your under 11s.
Blinked,
you miss it. Look,
I didn't miss it. It's kind of burned into my mind.
Okay, I had forgotten about that moment, actually, in amongst all of the rest of it. Anyway, so we will let everybody know, and with full warning. But, yes, it will be out there. And, you know, everybody...
You mean to get these rated, aren't you?
Well, yeah. We actually did. It was supposedly R16 last night, but one of the prize winners was only 10, so we had to let her in.
But she was there with her parents.
They
were able, you know, parental guidance and all.
Exactly. So that, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
It's not actually legal. Right.
No, it was just full frontal nudity in this one. Okay.
There was a little bit of painting in there, wasn't it?
Dan, what have you been doing?
No, I don't make the films.
Oh, okay.
He just judges them.
Okay.
Okay, so that is our show, and time to wrap up. We managed to get this one in under the hour, which is always our aim, so well done, team. Next week on the show, we are going to Google Vaughn and Wilson in the internship. We're going to find out what it's like on the Google campus. Will Smith teams up with son Jaden in the sci-fi / Scientology epic After Earth. I've read some really interesting articles about religious subtexts of that particular movie. And also, bearing in mind, for some people, it's actually more of an M. Night Shyamalan film than it is a Will Smith film. And of course, next week, Camille Rewinds as well.
Which I'm looking forward to. I missed it at the French Film Festival, and I'm so glad it's coming back.
Yeah, well, exactly, and I think that that film festival has done a particularly good job of picking stuff that is worth getting a full release.
Keeps growing and growing every year.
It does. All that on the show and more in next week's exciting, no doubt, episode of New Zealand's favourite movie podcast, Cinematica. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to click subscribe in iTunes or your own favourite podcasting software, and the latest episode will always be downloaded automatically. Leave us feedback at the iTunes store. Leave us ratings. It boosts us in terms of rankings.
And ego.
Yeah, and you can contact us and send us your two-word reviews, your suggestions for features. There are various questions that we've asked over the last few weeks. What film is your absolute romantic deal breaker? What's the film that if somebody you're going out with goes, I can't stand that film, you just have to love them and leave them. Tell us what that film is and why. And you can contact us via various social media means.
You can find us on Twitter at Cinematica. I need to find a better way of saying that instead of at.
Yeah.
You can find us on Twitter via at CinematicaCast, on Facebook at facebook.com/CinematicaPodcast.
We had 5 new likes this week.
Good.
Oh, yeah. Keep them coming.
Keep them coming. Yeah, that's right.
You can find us on Letterboxd as Cinematica, where we have our two-word reviews posted, and, of course, on our website at cinematica.co.nz. I almost messed it up this week.
Yeah, and you
I don't read it.
No,
it just flows
in.
Through me.
The show is a Guns of Steel production. The theme music at the beginning of the show was 6x6 by Earl Van Dyke. You can buy that at the iTunes store. We recommend you do. We're going to leave you with some more music. I was looking around today for something from the soundtrack of The Hunt. But I couldn't find any. Instead, thanks to iTunes, I found Basil Poledouris' fantastic closing theme to The Hunt for Red October from 1990. Remember that fantastic film, Sean Connery, Alec Baldwin, Sam Neill, and the Red Army Choir?
Scots Russian.
Who says we need to have music related to the episode?
I know. We're just totally random. Until next week, that's all from me.
Good night from me.
And all from me. Send in your music requests. How about that?
Yeah, give us some better selections.